You may have to help me with this. We're going to try it again. It's all set to go, but the operator may have some difficulties. We're going to start at verse 38. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. Now your shirt referred to your underwear. But by law, because it got cold there as well as it does here, not quite as cold, but you were to keep your outer garments. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. And that word perfect has the idea of being complete as a person, having integrity, being morally keeping God's standard at every level. It doesn't mean absolute perfection. That doesn't happen till we go to heaven. It was in high school that I learned about the litmus test, high school biology. And we were given a special piece of paper, and if we dripped something on that paper that was salty, it turned red. And if it was that right? No, if it was acidy, it was blue. And if it was salty, it was red. And the goal was to get blue from what you were using. Now, in these last weeks, we have seen what happens when Jesus Christ comes to us with his life-healing truth and his life-healing spirit. We are changed, even more so than a piece of litmus paper. We are changed permanently so that we can see our control center, our hearts, changed completely, so that we begin to be more like Christ, that as we look in the mirror, we see Jesus more and more. And I think the first sign that Jesus is getting through to us, that his spirit is getting through to us, is when our conscience kicks in and we feel guilty. Sometimes I think we want to get right to a complete standard of morality. But the first sign that God is at work is when in one area of life that we've neglected is becoming evident to us that it's not right. And that's the first step to those other steps that God can take us through. Having been promised the blessed life, the good life that the Beatitudes talk about for those who don't have that good life, we've seen these last weeks that we can say no to anger and yes to love. We can say no to fantasizing lust and yes to genuine intimacy and friendship. We can say no to lies and yes to the truth. But this morning, we probably have the most strenuous, the most trying litmus test of all in being like Jesus. And that is the whole area of what happens. What happens when someone hurts you, when someone wounds you, when someone actually hits you? What do we do then as Christ's apprentices? Well, Jesus starts first of all, by going back to what the Old Testament said and what they were saying in his day. He says here, you have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, and the reason he says that is because in the Old Testament, when that rule was given, it was meant to limit revenge. But by in Jesus' day, it was being used to justify revenge. There was a time in our world when, on a personal level, it was eye for eye and tooth for tooth. You poke me in the eye, I poke you in the eye, but just a little bit harder. And you break my tooth, I probably break two of yours. And there was an escalating violence. And so when God gave his will to the Jewish people, his law, he laid down some rules for how we relate personally. And so if someone broke your arm, you could go to the elders at the gate, and the presiding elder, who would be the judge, would break the person's arm who broke your arm. But no more. Because in that world, if someone broke your arm, you might cut off their head. The same thing. If you damage property to the extent of $500, then you'd have to pay $500, not a penny more. And in this way, there would be an expectation, there would be a standard, and there wouldn't be an escalation of revenge. You know, you have the famous story of the Hatfields and McCoys, who down south, who didn't even remember how the fight started, but they kept shooting each other. And when one member of the family was shot, then they would feel duty-bound to shoot someone from the other family. And it just went on and on. And that's what the Old Testament stopped. But by the time Jesus' day came, revenge was the pattern. Eye for eye, for them, meant revenge. They began to see eye to eye as a way of getting even. And they misrepresented the Old Testament in that way. And so they again had put loopholes in that law so that they could get revenge on one another. And you know how that goes. Perhaps you remember when you had kids, or you may have babysat. But mom hears Jimmy screaming. So she runs down the hall, and little Becky has Jimmy's hair in her hand. So mom pries her hand off of his hair and says, "Becky, you shouldn't do that anymore." And mom says to Jimmy, "Yep, Jimmy, you know your sister is only 2 years old, you're seven. You should understand, you know, she really doesn't know what she's doing." So mom settled the matter. She's walking down the hall, and she hears Becky screaming her lungs out. And she runs back, and Jimmy says, "Now she knows." Isn't there a Jimmy inside of all of us that when we get hurt, when someone does something to us, we also want to do it to them, but maybe a little bit harder, as Jimmy did? Studies have shown again and again that when you give people a chance to inflict injury on someone else, especially when they've been injured or at least set up scenarios, they will always inflict more pain than had been inflicted on them. There's something in us that wants to twist even the Old Testament to make it sound like we can indeed eye for eye, tooth for tooth, and forget why it was meant. So the answer is that we must not take revenge, but we must return good for evil. So don't get even, but return good for evil. I tell you, says Jesus, do not resist an evil person. Now, that's quite shocking. That goes against our very natures. But Jesus is here dealing with personal injury when he's saying this. And he's saying, don't set yourself up by what another person does. Don't let their hostility make you hostile. Remember, you're under new management. You're in God's kingdom now. And you have resources. You know, and you have the Spirit so that you can resist these kinds of tendencies to lash back the minute that you are injured personally. So again, the emphasis is on personal injury, especially upon you. But now, Jesus is going to give some illustrations from the daily life of the Jewish people. But be aware, he's not calling us to be doormats. He's not calling us to just give in and let somebody run over us. No, otherwise we'd say Jesus really doesn't understand real life. He doesn't really understand what we have to deal with. But he does. And so he realizes in his world too there was abuse and there was mugging and there was scams. And he wants us to deal with that. Now as we face those concrete situations, he is going into daily life as the Jewish people knew it, and he's giving illustrations. He's not giving a new law, a new rule that this is exactly how we have to respond. It gives a principle of how we should respond. But there are other passages of Scripture that indicate, especially when we're threatened with death, self-defense may be needed. If there's abuse, we can't just let somebody hit us and hit us and hit us again. And so, as we go through these, they're illustrations that his audience would understand, and I think we still understand as well. And so he gives four illustrations. He talks about a slap, a lawsuit, a walk, and a loan. First of all, he wants us to return good for evil courageously when slapped. And notice, it's when slapped with a right hand, and I think that's the key to this passage. Because in the ancient world, and even in the Middle East today, you do not use your left hand. The left hand is a sign of dishonor. It's really, honestly, used for bathroom purposes. And so the left hand has always been a hand of dishonor. And so you would slap someone who you disliked with the back of your right hand. And to use to backhand somebody was like spitting on them. It was insulting them. In a culture of the Jewish day, it was a culture of shame and honor. And so to backhand someone with the right hand was a tremendous insult. It was like treating you like a slave or a dog. So what does Jesus say? Don't just take it or run away with your tail between your legs. But stand up and courageously offer your left cheek. Now, in that day, in that culture, you would not think of using your left hand to slap somebody. So effectively, you were saying to this person, I'm standing here, and I'm not running, and I'm not cowering, but I'm calling you to do something else. The guy doesn't want to fight you, but he or she needs to do something. And so you're calling them on it. It was kind of like what Branch Rickey, who was a manager of, I believe it was the Cubs. But Jackie Robinson was hired by him to be the very first black baseball player. And he told Jackie Robinson, "I don't want you to retaliate. If someone on second base calls you a black so-and-so, I want you to take that." Well, he says, "Do you mean you don't want me to fight?" Well, Ricky put it this way. "I want a ball player who puts enough, with guts enough to fight back, to not fight back. I want a ball player with guts enough not to fight back. You've got to do the job with base hits, stolen bases, and fielding ground balls. Nothing else." And Robinson did turn the other cheek. He did resist a lot of insults, a lot of put downs. And he did it with his hitting, his fielding, his running. And in the process, opened the doors for people who were image bearers of God, who were equal to those who were white, and changed baseball. But he did it not by hostility. He did it by standing his ground nonviolently. Okay, we can go on. We need to act wisely when sued. Here again, you have a person who has two items of possession. That's all he's got. So Jesus is exaggerating here. He's making a case that here is a person who has only his outer clothing and his underwear. Now, in a court of law, if someone wanted to sue you, they could only take your undergarments. They could not take your outer garments. You had to stay warm, and therefore they did not do that. But Jesus says, if you're out there at the city gate where they did the judging, where everyone's watching, and someone sues you and wins your underwear, give them your outer clothing too. Well, in good Jewish society, that probably wouldn't happen because you'd be naked. And yet, you remember, Isaiah the prophet, as a sign to the injustice of his people, was called by God to walk around with no clothes for 3 months. We were reading Isaiah, and Diane and I were debating, was it just for an hour a day, or was it all the time? We don't know. But Jesus is saying, stand your ground again. Don't give in to the hostility, but show them how greedy, how crass they are by giving them more than they asked, because that's the way your Father is in heaven, giving us much more than we could expect, and yet at the same time serving notice to them and maybe even changing their attitude when you give more than they expected. Now, they may not be bothered at all, but it's not them that you're concerned about. It's your Father who saved you through Jesus Christ. And then we can act graciously when we are forced. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Now, it probably doesn't happen too often, but a policeman might come up to you and say, "Hey, I need your vehicle," or, "Can you drive me such and such a place?" And you might say, "Well, can I drive you further?" Well, in the days of Jesus, Romans had the right to ask you to carry their gear, their duffel bag or their backpack or whatever else they were carrying. You could be asked to carry it for 1 mile. During the Revolutionary War, the British soldier had a right to ask any American colonist to carry his baggage for 1 mile. Jesus says, be like your Father. Show them that you're part of a different enterprise. When a Roman soldier just says, carry my bags, you not only carry it, but when you get to your 1 mile marker, you say, can I carry it another mile? That may not only astound the Roman soldier who expected only hostility from Jews, a grudging carrying of baggage, but it gave him an inkling of something more, something else. Joel Diaz discovered that. Well, he helped a mugger discover that. He was a social worker. He was stepping off the subway, and a teenager came up to him brandishing a knife. He said, I want your money. So the guy, your life isn't worth your wallet. So he gave the guy the wallet. But as the guy was kind of running away, he said, hey, if you're going to be robbing people all night, you better have my coat too. And the guy came back and couldn't believe that he was offering him a coat. And then he said, how about we go to my favorite diner just down the road? And this teen came along. And he saw how this gentleman, how Joel treated the waitress. Really nice to her. And she was nice back. And Joel did get his wallet back. Did keep his coat. But more than that, he introduced a young man to a way of life he had never experienced. His life was eye for eye, tooth for tooth. The law of the gang. And so it is that Jesus is trying to say, give more. Stand your ground, but show them the difference. And finally, he comes to calling us to be helpful when begged. If you've gone to third world countries at all, you see that begging is a way of life. And in Jewish culture, you were supposed to give to the poor. But here Jesus is talking about a case where there is a needy person. And yes, he may be whiny, he may keep following you down the street. But what Jesus is saying, give this person what they need. And so that means you don't just give them money. Certainly not today. Never ever give someone on a street corner money, because they will probably misuse it. But give them what they need. I know one lady in our Sunnyside church had a whole bunch of McDonald's coupons. And when she was met someone on the corner in Yakima, she'd roll down her window or push the button down the window and just give them a coupon. There's creative ways of doing that. And Jesus is pointing that out. You should help, but give help that helps. And just giving money does not help. Giving a way to out of that kind of poverty, guiding a person to an agency that can feed them, sending them to a food bank, knowing when the food bank hours are. And that's the kind of picture Jesus is giving you. So if someone asks you to help, look them right in the eye and just say, how can I really help you? What do you really need? Of course, that means that if we're face to face with someone, we do not do the thing we usually like to do, kind of go across the street or avoid eye contact. But if it's safe and you feel Spirit guiding you, do so. Seek to find out what they really need. And you may only be able to say, I really can't help you, but I really care for you, and I know there's people who will help get you off the street. So we finally come to the heart of it all, and Jesus ends our time with this passage by giving us these guidelines. You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Now, if we go to the next slide. Oh, let me go back one. I thought I had another passage there. Yeah. Leviticus 19:18. That's the one that talks about loving your neighbor as yourself. Now, in the Old Testament, it said, do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against one of your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Now, here there was a total misreading of Scripture by the Pharisees, who were the moral guidelines for God's people. You notice they added something. What did they add to that? What were they saying here? Let's go back. Okay, you have heard that it was said, love your neighbors and, what did they add? Hate your enemies. And what did they delete? They said, love your neighbor, period. Leviticus said, love your neighbor as yourself. So in one fell swoop, they were able to say, well, I have to love you, but not as much as I love myself. And so to love another person is to ask yourself, how would I act towards me if I was there? And so love has different ways of responding. How does the grocery clerk want my love? Well, I want to be treated. I want to treat her as if I were a grocery clerk. What would I want? Your husband, your wife, your grandchildren, you love them in a different way. You love the IRS in a different way. You probably don't love them feeling-wise, but you give them what is needed, and that's what love demands in that case. And so you love them as yourself. The Pharisees had blocked that out, and they had added, and hate your enemy. Because they had come to a point of saying, there's us and there's them. We are the good people. We are the ones God loves. But they had defined neighbor as someone who was a fellow Jew who was keeping the law. You notice in the New Testament they didn't have much love for tax collectors, prostitutes, foreigners, migrants. No, there was no, even though God had said, you even have to treat the stranger in your land as you would want to be treated if you were a stranger in the land. And so Jesus sets the record straight and calls us to that kind of love. And the response, I think, of every human being is, how? How can I love that way? And yet Jesus says, I've given you not only the truth, but I've given you myself. But I think we can know that Jesus wants us to, but there are two reasons why. First of all, we have to love indiscriminately as our Father loves. And so Jesus says, I tell you, love your neighbors and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. Well, how is God the Father like that? Well, we go on. He causes his Son to rise on the evil and the good. You know, sometimes we think, well, we've had, you know, rain at just the right time, snow at the right time in the mountains. God's been good to us. But he's also been good to those who maybe are our enemies. People who wouldn't be upset if they heard that we had died. So he pours love on those who hate him and respond to all his blessings with abuse of those blessings. And yet, we have that model. We call that common grace, where God showers his favor on all human beings, but not all respond to that common grace. And then he adds one more thing. And a second reason why, not only does God love indiscriminately, but he loves completely. And so he ends on that note where he's saying Christians need to have a higher standard. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? So be perfect as I am perfect, in the sense that be complete. Don't shut out the enemy. Don't shut out the needy. Don't shut out those who God is putting his rain and his sunshine on. And so it is that Jesus says, follow me. Be my apprentice. Take my yoke upon you, because I can help you carry it by my Spirit. And we have his example. We sang about it at the first song this morning. How could it be? Jesus told us on that mountain that we were to not return evil, but return good for evil. They hit him. They spit upon him. And he had said, turn the other cheek. He did, to the point where they totally humiliated him. He said, if they take your outer garments, give them your other clothes as well. Well, by the time Jesus hung on the cross, even his outer clothing and his seamless underclothing had been taken, and he was on the cross, courageously taking it all the insults for us. If soldiers force you to go a mile, Jesus said, go a second mile. What did he do? He carried his own cross until he could carry it no more. And then one of his disciples, or someone who became his disciple, carried it the rest of the way. And even as the soldiers slammed nails into his hands and hung him on that cross, he said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they are doing. That may have seemed like cowardice in the eyes of the Romans, but to us it shows tremendous courage. And if someone asks, he said, don't refuse what they need. In that garden of Gethsemane, Jesus prayed that he might do God's will. And God's will was that he would drink the cup of God's suffering on our behalf all the way down. And that was all so that he could be here today with us, offering us his forgiveness, his Spirit, his strength, his help, so that we might do good to those who do us wrong. Let's sing about that as we sing about loving our neighbor.